I am Plant on the Line in Vancouver at thecommentary.ca. I could not have told you what a genome is, but after reading the new book from Dr. Peter Cullis, I could try, and after reading it, I could understand the advancements in technology that have brought us to the point where we're on our way to diagnosing diseases earlier, thus treating them earlier, and providing ourselves with longer and better qualities of life. That's Dr. Cullis' gift, the ability to distill otherwise challenging science into something eminently readable and accessible. He also has a great ability with a language that you wouldn't have expected from a book like this. The book is called The Personalized Medicine Revolution, How Diagnosing and Treating Disease Are About to Change Forever. We'll very soon likely be able to one day get medical treatment based on the unique markers of our genome, which is different from today when thousands of North Americans die because of an adverse reaction to a prescribed drug. The figure's 100,000 deaths a year because the drugs don't work on a person's specific genetic makeup. We'll soon see more than a one-size-fits-all approach to medical care, and that will lead to more proactive care and healing. But there are implications to all this. The costs are prohibitive at the moment. I'll ask Dr. Cullis about the lack of will on governments to implement more of this analysis and testing, and we'll also talk about the ethical dilemmas that invariably arise. Peter Cullis is director of the Life Sciences Institute and professor in the Department of Biochemistry and Molecular Biology at the University of British Columbia. He's also chair of the BC Personalized Medicine Initiative. He's received the Prix Galien, Canada's premier award for developing new drugs to treat disease. The book is published by Greystone. Please welcome to the Plant on the Line program, Peter Cullis. Dr. Cullis, good morning.
Yeah, hi, Joe.
Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, pleasure.
So in terms of how technology has changed how we look at ourselves and our health, I suppose the Internet has given us a great wealth of information. We go to the doctor now. We know a lot more about what we're going in with than, say, 15, 20 years ago. But some of that is also not so good. I mean, you get people diagnosing themselves, I suppose.
Oh, yes, yes. No, it's which is fraught with its own difficulties. It's been estimated that if you go onto Google and use Dr. Google, up to 60% of the time you can actually be correct, but of course 40% of the time you're completely wrong, and you do tend to dramatize, over-interpret the possibilities. And it's called cyberchondria, I think is the name of the term.
Huh. Yeah. So when you talk about personalized medicine, how different would that be from the sort of care that we're getting today from our doctors? How would the doctor's visit change, say?
Well, it's probably best to illustrate it by what we normally encounter when we go to a doctor these days, and we might have some ache or pain or whatever the trouble is. We explain it to the doctor, and very often the doctor will then say, "Well, I think you need to take this particular medication if you have high blood pressure or you've got gout or you've got whatever the diagnosis is that they make." Now, which is fine, except we tend to be becoming a bit over medicated. But there's real issues associated with it, as you mentioned in your introduction. And one of the primary ones, of course, is that we're not all the same. And so while drugs might work on average over a large population for you as an individual, A, they may not work, and B, they may actually be harmful to you. And so, as you mentioned in your introduction, the figures are quite worrying. The fourth leading cause of death in North America is an adverse drug reaction to a prescription drug. And the other equally worrying statistic is that 50% of prescribed drugs do not work on the person that they're given to. The immediate change is going to happen, I think, or some of the ones that are going to move the fastest are ones where we start to tailor the medication that the doctor advises to your particular genetic makeup to make sure that the drug is A, not going to harm you, and B, could actually help you. And that requires there's genetic tests becoming available now, which are relatively inexpensive, and which can start to give the doctor guidance with regard to what they prescribe.
So ideally, what would you like to see happen? The minute that you're born, you get tested so that you have sort of a road map as to what will happen to you, say, down the line?
Yes, in terms of the your genome, your genetic code, really it doesn't tell you what you've got, so to say, except in the case of course inherited a genetic disease, or in the case of cancer, of course that's indicative or diagnostic of cancer. But for a lot of other disease states, your genetic code can indicate you've got a tendency or a risk of a particular disease, but it certainly doesn't tell you that you've actually got it. And so the we can see the day arriving when you're born, your genetic code is sequenced, and now that's getting much more inexpensive than it used to be, then that's kept as part of your medical record. And so that could be useful in two or three ways. Number one, of course, you would know that maybe you're at risk of heart disease later on in life, or that there was other genetic disorders, that high blood pressure, cardiovascular issues, whatever. So you'd be on the lookout for those. But you'd also use that as a way to assay, or as a way to test whether or not you're going to be, a particular drug is going to be useful to you, is going to have the beneficial effects, and not going to have too much in the way of negative side effects. So those are ways which genetic code can be useful. The other information that's going to start to come in is not just genetics, but measuring other proteins in your body. We already do that. Whenever you go to a doctor, or very often when you go to a doctor will order a blood test to measure, say, certain proteins in your blood to diagnose everything from arthritis many other disorders, mm-hmm. kidney disorders, etc. But the technologies that are coming on now are allowing us to measure not just 1 or 10 or maybe 100 or 200 different proteins in your blood, and those will start to give you very accurate diagnostics of what you already have, increasingly early stage diagnostics to what the diseases you might be trending towards.
And in terms of, because I know nothing about genetics and the genome, how throughout one's life does that change a great deal?
I mean, your genetic code does not change at all during your lifetime. Although, obviously, ways in which particular proteins get expressed may change. In other words, when you're conceived, there's only one, as this term, totipotent cell that's formed. And then all your other tissues form from that. And so in order for those different tissues to have different capabilities, then the genome, which remains the same in all those cells, but only particular parts of it are expressed, or in other words, made into proteins.
And so does that mean that we'd have to be tested regularly for other things, like how much protein is in our blood and all that?
Exactly. Yeah. So you may have. There's a large number of, say, 10,000 or more proteins circulating around in your blood, and of course your blood bathes every organ in your body, your brain, your lungs, your heart, your all the kidney, all the organs, and so from all those organs, a subset of proteins will leach out, and so if you were to detect in the blood proteins that are, say, coming from your brain or from your lung or any other organ, eyes, you're going to be able to get a snapshot of the health of that organ. And so that's the blood is turning out to be a window into your a snapshot of your health, as it were, pretty much any organ in your body. And we can see that kind of thing happening in the future, that simple blood test, or at least it will seem simple, from a pinprick of blood will allow you to say to determine the health of most, if not all, of the organs in your body. And in addition to that, will also pick up the presence of disease tissues such as cancer tissues.
In terms of the testing of genes, the mapping of genomes, how much of that has been the result of great change in the last, say, 15, 20 years? I mean, what can we do now that we couldn't do, say, 15, 20 years ago?
Oh, it's a great deal. I mean, that's the that's really the reason why personalized medicine is finally becoming possible. In the year, I guess it was 2002, so only 13 years ago, was when we first got the first human genome sequenced, and that cost $3 billion and took 12 years or longer. Nowadays it takes 2 days, and the costs are coming down into the $1,000 sort of range. There may be a bit more to get that interpreted, but it's really now bringing it to the realm of where individuals are getting their genome sequenced. Not as a matter of routine, but there's certainly hundreds of thousands of people now who have had their genome sequenced and are increasingly using that as part of their medical record.
And in terms of the impediments to personalized medicine being, say, the norm in our context here in British Columbia, what are the impediments? I mean, is it really money at this point?
Well, it's money in part, but it's also this is a new technology, and the interpretation is probably one of the biggest impediments. We can get all this genetic information, and we can get the proteins in your blood, and we can get the metabolites, in other words, the small molecules in your blood that say your food is converted into. And we can also measure your microbiome, which is all the bugs or some of the bugs that live in you and on you. But the issue now is increasingly to correlate that with the actual disease you may have or be trending towards. And so that's requiring studies of large populations. So in other words, we need to get this kind of genetic and protein and metabolites and microbe information over a lot of people, see what their phenotype is. Their phenotype is their various personal traits that can vary from everything from the color of their hair to the particular disorder they might be suffering from, and correlate that with the molecular makeup of that individual, right through from the genetic through to the microbiome.
And you must encounter, through your advocacy, people who ascribe sinister motives to all of this. I mean, people who are just skeptical at best. How do you allay their concerns?
Of course, in all these things, you're going to be people want to opt out, as it were, from having their particular information used for research purposes. Then they're certainly going to have the opportunity to do that. But surprisingly, in most of these studies, I mean, for example, people with cancer aren't too worried about whether or not their cancer genome is used for research or compared with the cancer genome of other people, so that they can get the most appropriate therapy.
And back to this idea of what's changed in the last 15, 20, 25 years or so, are there diseases that are found faster today than could have been, say, years ago?
Well, yes. I mean, what we're starting to do is to really, we may have had the broad classification of diseases, but we haven't got, in many cases, haven't got down to the particular disease that you may have. And for example, cancer is a good example of that. It used to be that, and still is to a large extent, that we categorize cancer according to where it occurs: breast cancer, lung cancer, prostate cancer, etc. Now, increasingly, it's becoming realized that cancer, as a genetic disease, is the real way to characterize it is by the genetics of the cancer itself. And so, by sequencing the genetic code of the cancer, we can now start to evolve towards therapies where we're using drugs that just work on that particular genetic makeup of the cancer itself. And this is an important thing when you think that 75% of cancer drugs that are used today do not work on the person that they're given to, and they're very toxic compounds. So the extent to which we can, personalize or individualize the therapy we're giving cancer patients, that's extremely important, and it's an area of really intense research and progress at the moment.
You mentioned in the book Angelina Jolie and what she had in her life. I guess she had some tests done and found that she was predisposed genetically to cancer, breast cancer. Is that right?
That's right. She had a gene, the BRCA1 gene, and the details there are, I'm not totally familiar with the details of her. she was advised by her physician that she had approximately a 90% chance of getting breast cancer, and it was on that information and which was certainly derived at least in part from the genetic makeup of the of her genetic makeup that caused her to make that decision.
And then she went on to get a mastectomy. Yep. A double mastectomy.
That's
because
right.
of that. So this is a case, I guess, where she had access to this testing, this sort of testing, and was able to make a decision, right?
That's right. And, you know, the testing there was a fairly limited test. I mean, she was tested because her mother, I think her grandmother, but anyway, mm-hmm. her mother certainly had breast cancer, and so she knew she was when she was relatively young, and so she knew that Angelina Jolie knew that she was at risk for this, and so she got tested. I don't think she had her whole genome sequence, but I think she just got tested for that specific gene.
This brings up an ethical quandary, and that is, will this testing only be, say, available or beneficial to for the wealthy? And you address some of that in the book,
right? And you know, the it's the same with any new technology. And when we bought flat screen TVs, you know, 10 years ago, they cost $5,000 or whatever, and now they're substantially less. As these new technologies come in, they're going to be expensive initially, but one can expect the prices to come down quite substantially. As I indicated, the price of the whole genome sequencing coming down from $3 billion to $1,000 or so nowadays, and it looks like the trend line is continuing. So one can see these tests moving into the same range as other tests we might use, whether that's an imaging test or whether it's an expensive drug that we might be taking, whatever. So you can see it kind of coming into the same sort of price range as many other technologies or drugs or whatever that we use in the medical system today.
And do you find that governments in this country have the will to go towards all this?
Well, it's a big transition for them, and and they're viewing this. I mean, I would say that health authorities, such as ones in Canada and elsewhere, they can see that molecularly based medicine is going to be the medicine of the future, but it's a bit difficult for them to start to say, okay, well, how do they implement this in some sensible way? Because as I mentioned, a lot of the problem here is that we can get enormous amounts of data, but very often we don't know really how to interpret it all that well. And over the next 5 years, I think as we manage to correlate particular genetic and protein and other profiles with particular disorders and with the with right ways to to treat people, then we're going to start to see the health system adopting it. I mean, what they're going to be on the lookout for are things that not only improve healthcare outcomes for individuals, but also reduce the costs. I mean, that's the wall that they're up against, is that there's a continual escalation of costs. And in BC, I think we're at about 45% of the total provincial budget is spent on healthcare. And so there's a real effort, obviously a tremendous effort being made to reduce costs. And there is real potential within the personalized medicine approach, the molecularly based medicine approach, to save money. For example, half the drugs that we take today don't work on the person that they're prescribed for. If we can prescribe these drugs in a much more precise way, there's $1 billion. We spend about $2 billion on drugs in BC. There's $1 billion to be saved right there. Similarly, adverse drug reactions cost, it's in the range of $1 billion a year. If we can prevent at least half of those, then you're saving money there. So there is a potential for saving money as well as improving healthcare outcomes.
And in your field, Dr. Cullis, do you find that you as scientists, as doctors, are having discussions with regards to the ethics of it all? I mean, we've already touched on one aspect of that. But just say, if you're looking at research on a group of people and you find out that one or more people are, say, in line for cancer, do you warn them? Well, what if you find out that, say, people aren't related to one another when they thought they were? I mean, do you broach those subjects as well?
Well, these are questions that really they're in the process of being addressed. As I mentioned before, the surprising thing is the extent to which people are willing to share their data. We've become with social media and all the rest of it, we seem to be becoming a society that spreads our personal information around
too often
in a very direct way. Other jurisdictions are doing some interesting things. For example, in the in England, the National Health Service, which covers the 60 million people or so in England, has a policy now that you have to specifically opt out of the spread of your own information or the use of your own information for research in order for it not to be used. So in other words, every time you go to a doctor, unless you've opted out specifically from that data gathering exercise, that data will be used for population-wide studies to try to correlate your particular profile, like clinical profile, and whatever drugs you may be taking with outcomes.
And I guess the other thing that comes up is, once armed with the information that you could get from all this testing, what makes you think we'll act on it? I mean, we all know that smoking is bad for you, yet people do it. We know that diet and exercise is good for us, yet a lot of us don't do any of that. I mean, you will have people who feel that ignorance is bliss.
Oh, yes, and that's a really interesting question, and nobody really knows the answer to it. The parallel is the extent to which people actually want to know this information. If you get your genome sequenced, do you really want to know if you have a enhanced risk of Alzheimer's or other diseases that for which there's presently no cure? And the anecdotal evidence along those lines is that about half of us are going to want to know whatever is going on and will act on it, and the other half may not. And we'll have to see how that plays out. I mean, from a societal point of view, it's a really interesting question.
And so the next 5-10 years, in terms of the technology, in terms of the attitudes that we have in this country, in this continent, it seems limitless, doesn't it?
Oh yeah, it really does. I mean, it's a whole new. I mean, if you want to think of it in terms of other industries, we've had the digital revolution, as it were, or information age, really change so many other aspects of our lives. But one area that it hasn't really hit yet very hard has been medicine, and really what we're seeing with the personalized medicine or molecularly based medicine is the advent of the information age really really coming to grips with modern medical care. And these things tend to happen fairly quickly, I do think over the next 10 years we're going to see some enormous changes as we get much more molecularly based information about ourselves that's put in some digital form, and that we can then compare with one another and with outcomes and with use as in the general population to see what the best therapies and correlate to the best outcomes with reduced costs, etc. That's going to, when that starts to become obvious, that those the benefits that come from that, the revolution could start to really move quite quickly.
Dr. Cullis, this is such a great book, a fascinating one. Thanks for your time today. Continued good luck with it.
Well, yeah, thanks very much, Joe.
The book is called The Personalized Medicine Revolution, How Diagnosing and Treating Disease Are About to Change Forever. It's published by Greystone. Its author, Dr. Peter Cullis, joined me on the line from here in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Planta.